Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Playful Humans podcast. I'm your host, Mike Montague, and my guest this week is Alan Clark. He is a celebrity photographer at alanclarkphotography.com or at Alan Clark Photography on all the socials. When we say celebrities, like, what do George Bush, Peyton Manning, Ludacris, kid president have in common? They've all had their picture taken by Alan Clark. Other than that, not a whole lot, I don't think. Anyway, if you would like to be a more playful human yourself, go to playfulhumans.com and check us out there. We have a quiz. You can find out what type of play you enjoy most or join the community of other playful adults. Here we go. The woohoos. Alan, welcome to the
podcast. Trying to make a woohoo. I was trying to make a woohoo, a visual woohoo for you.
It was great. I like that all the time. We got wow.
Yeah.
Mom.
All that. Yeah.
Yeah. But we like to start with the joke of the week here on the podcast. The joke of the week this week is brought to you by naps. Failure to take naps could cause you getting in trouble with the police. You would be resisting arrest. Okay, here's the joke. My son was chewing on electrical cords, so I had to ground him. But
yeah, that's your rim worry. Shot. That was your rim shot.
He's conducting himself properly. Yeah. It's a double. It's a two for.
Oh man, it was a two for Tuesday. It's a two for Tuesday.
Yeah. There you go. Do you you had a favorite joke? Do you have one for us?
Why can't dinosaurs talk?
I don't know.
Because they're dead. They're all dead.
I'm so excited to talk to you today because, I mean, I think you do cool work and photography is playful. It's artistic and expression. And I love getting outside of the normal scope of what we think play is. Like, it has to have a ball and the score or something. But, you know, video games, artistic work, all kinds of cool stuff. And then you approach your career very playfully too. And I feel like sometimes people have this misconception about the arts, right? That, like, yeah, by fitting in or by doing it like everybody else, you can become popular. And it's actually the opposite. You have to have a unique look. You have to be outside the norm. You have to break rules sometimes in order to get noticed. Has that been your experience? And what, yeah, how do you think about your style and approach to your work?
It has been, because I can't tell you how many times I have to remind people, whether it's, you know, a friend of mine, you know, like wedding or something, and I'll show up and do that just because I love my friends. And I love, believe it or not, I do all this high end commercial stuff and do all this stuff. And I actually like to shoot weddings. It's kind of crazy. People think I'm nuts. And all I can ever think about is because you're getting paid to go have fun, hang out with your friends or make new ones. You know what I mean? And you're getting paid, yeah, to do it. And I don't understand, like, people have this really way of looking down on wedding photography, family photography. And I've always said that as photographers, we have the most noble profession because we record people's lives. And I think that that's a very, very important job, but one you shouldn't look down on. And I don't like it when I hear students or people coming to try to get a job with me or an internship or something, and they have this little attitude of, I don't do weddings. You know what I mean? And I'm like,
yeah,
all that tells me is that you just, you know, can't deal with people. And unfortunately, when right, you're doing that, you're missing opportunities. I mean, you're thinking, like, think about all the opportunities. You have literally everything in the world wrapped up in shooting a wedding.
You got great scenery. You got good colors. You got good people. Yeah. Yeah.
And you got, like, literally people who will show up and look good for you that you don't have to really do a lot of work. It's almost like shooting a model. And I've never understood that. And I mean, look, you've seen the stuff that I do. I don't really even let out there that I shoot weddings. It's just, I like doing them and I consider it a very noble profession. You know, it's call me crazy, but I mean, dude, I've done the artsy stuff. I've worked with artsy bands.
I relate to that so much, really. You know, I wanted to ask you about the artsy stuff too, but I can relate to that because as, like, a DJ, you know, doing weddings and stuff, it's interesting, but I always feel like I'm getting paid to go out on a Saturday night, drink, have fun, party, dance. and I get cash in my pocket. Everybody else is spending money to go to the club or spending money on the party. And I'm getting
stupid here. I mean, is this just not the coolest, most fun job that we have? I mean, that's, I don't get it either.
It feels like a cheat code, right? I still do that with game shows. Yeah. I host game shows for people and they're paying, you know, 20, 30, 100 bucks a person to play the game. I'm getting paid all of that money to host it for them. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Well, right? You know, so, what?
But
you know what? That comes back. Too. It comes back to you. Comes back to this show. It's your perspective on what you're doing. You could be the most fun garbage man, garbage person. You could be the most fun, you know, air traffic controller. You could be the most fun anything. It's always about your perspective and how you treat your life and what you want to do with it. And to me, I think that's most of it. I think people just decide that they want this to be a bad experience, or they don't think it'll be fun, or they don't try to even think about it. They don't even put fun into the equation a lot of times. And so that is something that I have done literally over almost 30 years that I've done this. I've thought, you know what? I'm not going to do this unless this is fun. And I think that's okay. I think you can do that in every profession, period. I mean, I'm sure there's really serious professions you can't, but you know what I'm saying? They're most,
I mean, if it's brain surgery or something like that, hopefully those people are having fun and they enjoy their work. You don't want to get creative and screwing around. You don't want the knock-knock jokes while you're doing that. But I get what you're saying. I guess that's a hard balance for people too. So anytime I talk with somebody who's an artist like yourself, I want to ask them how they balance the work they do for fun and their creativity and their expression versus the paid work. Because I do think even when you're doing your own passion and you're having fun, if it's a work for, you know, Nike or, you know, somebody that you've done, they have a look too, and they want their look sometimes, or they have certain requirements. How do you balance paid work? And some people call that selling out. I call it being a professional, but you know, balancing your needs and your fun versus the client's needs.
Well, I think, that's a really good question, because over time I have had people that I've hired almost be like a buffer in between me and the client, because the client doesn't know that I know what I know. They can't understand a lot of times, like my list. And here's the thing, like when I make my checklist. And so with commercial, high-end commercial photography, your checklist is really long. So imagine if working in radio, which you have, if you did all of the jobs, so you were the program director, music director, marketing and sales, and you were all four of those on day of, you almost don't have any time to explain all the steps that it takes to make this shoot happen. You almost don't have any time to talk about the checklist. And so I don't. And what I don't reveal is how difficult and hard this is to be either A, be creating on the spot, or B, pushing through when an idea is not working, or pushing through when there's a problem on the set, or pushing through when attitudes are in the wrong place and they need to be aligned and all that type of stuff. And it's so I don't reveal that. What I let them do is, and they do, man, let me tell you, when you're working for big brands, they are very vocal, is the best way to say it. They're very vocal, and they kind of put a stink out into the whole room, like when they do, and they start getting worried about time, and they
this is serious. Yeah.
Well, they bring their stress into this place, and I have to go up to them and go, hey, look, I've got this. You need to trust me. Because that's what it is. All of this is trust. Mm-hmm. And I have to go up to them and just say, hey, you need to trust me. I've got everything. And they were like, well, what about this? And I will literally start naming all 42 things that we just did. And they just kind of look at me like, oh crap, and he really does have this. And so they don't know that I'm doing this, but what I do not do is I don't allow tension, stress, and those types of things into the environment that you're in. You have to kind of protect the environment that you're in a lot of times. And so that means if you're going to bring fun into the equation, protect the fun. It's fun, but protect the fun, and also, you know, protect, you know, your talents and things like that, because, you know, they're not going to know this until the end of the shoot, or they can look at the results, or, you know, whatever. And then they come back and they're like, hey man, I can't tell you how many times it's been, hey man, I'm sorry. I know you knew what you're doing. I just was really stressed and all this kind of stuff. And I said, I know that. That's why you hired me.
Right. And it's so amazing. I mean, I can relate so much to my DJ work, where you got a bride on the day of and they're like, well, I want to prove everything on the playlist, or let me give you 50 songs to play. And I was like, look, you can do whatever you want, but look, grandmas and kids like the chicken dance, and I'm going to get that request whether you put it on the playlist or not. So how do you want to handle that? Or do you just want to enjoy your party and you want to let me handle the music?
Yeah.
Because if you're going to try and produce the whole thing, you're not going to be a participant at this party. You're going to be a producer. You're going to be working, right?
I can't tell you how many times I've had to take a stepdad, a dad, you know, the extended family, sometimes the bride behind the curtain, behind something and over in the corner and just be like, hey, this is supposed to be fun. This is not fun. I remember one, I was shot for a friend of mine, and I had to go up to her and hold both her hands. And no, actually, first I excused everybody from the room. I said, you guys go in the multi-purpose room. I just said, I'm just going to hang here for a second with the bride, you know, and we just sat there and I said, hey, you're ruining this. And I went to college with her and we'd been friends for a long time. And I just said, hey, you're ruining this.
You're blowing it.
She made four of the bridesmaids cry. And I was just like, this is not how the wedding's supposed to go. And I said, you need to snap out of it. I said, I love you, but you need to snap out of it because you're making this experience miserable, not just for everybody, but yourself. You're miserable. And I said, you got to quit right now and let me do this and let everybody kind of let this ride. And she just kind of did the cartoon like that. You know what I mean? And
she, shake it off. Yeah. Reset.
She shook it off. And then the rest of the day was amazing fun. And so we have that kind of power. Awesome. You can do that as a creator and as a, honestly, an entrepreneur, you have the power to change the perspective in the situation if you want to. You just have to want to and be bold enough to do it. You know what I mean? Because it's a very, you may be out there on your own. You may be sticking your neck out a little bit to do this, but you have to, because you have to protect fun and protect nerves, protect feelings and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes it calls you to kind of step up to do it.
Another question I like to ask artists like yours, I think there's interesting things about each profession. Like I interviewed a professional juggler who like was on America's Got Talent, made it to the finals and all kinds of cool, you know, big, huge events, commercials and the Tonight Show and stuff. And it's like, that is one where like everybody knows if you screw up, right? You drop one pin or one ball and everybody in the audience is like, you blew it. Yeah. But I think photography is almost the same way, that you're trying to capture moments. And if the moment passes and you don't get it, there's not much you can do. And you've worked with the NFL, Major League Baseball and stuff. Yeah. And even if it's, you know, a wedding is our example today, but MTV or the Grammys, like that moment of the Grammys is only happening that night. So if the equipment doesn't work, if you missed it, if you weren't paying attention, you were off your game, lighting wasn't right, like you missed the moment. What is a career like that like? And do you love, are you able to find a way to play with it or backups? I mean, how do you think about that and getting that right
moment? You just said it, backup. So that for everything that I do, it's almost, and you would understand this just coming from sound, you almost know, like when I show up on sets, a lot of times I'm make dang well sure that they've got minimum 5 to 8 sources of audio going, you know, somehow, like, and you have to, because I don't know what it is. It almost seems like the world is conspiring against you when it comes to audio. But it just does. And so you have to have backup. And it just happened on this trip in Hawaii. We were on it like out near the beach. The sound was horrible. Obviously there was wind and mist and everything that was working and the labs weren't working properly and you name it was happening. And I think so, like when you're doing a shoot and you have to prepare, the biggest pressure used to be when I used to work and do more editorial, like magazines and things like that, because, you know, when you work with star celebrities or CEOs or whatever, and it's for Time and Wired and Newsweek and Rolling Stone and that type of thing, there is no second chance and there is no shoot this again. Mm-hmm. And there is no reshoot and there is no acceptance of anything other than your best and get it. And that's, you just don't have another choice. I would even say, even if you're shooting family and wedding and stuff like that, which again, I don't do much of any more these days. You kind of can, hey, I didn't get that. Can you do that again? Kind of thing. You can do that like in those situations, right? Not when somebody's very impatient and has 10 minutes, not when they're a sitting president, not when they're, right, you know, they know, they may not know what their schedule is, but somebody does. And every 10 to 8 minutes is something. So when you do that, what I've done is I will, a lot of times, like what we have to do in this profession, we will set everything up, literally have it to all where they have to do is just walk in, you know, and I've had it, man, that light failed. So what happened? I got a second and third light already ready to go, powered on. And I just, like, that one goes down, I just scoot this next one in. and put it in the exact same position, the one that broke. And you have to almost think like that. It's almost like for every decision you make, you've got to have three more behind it. That's that list I'm talking to you about. And mm-hmm. you have to have backups for your backups. And there's just no way, like you said, to get it again. So, and not only that, it's interesting to get the shot. A lot of times what you're doing by adding all these extra variables, you're taking your success variable and you're pushing it higher, and taking the problematic or, you know, ruin variable and you're pushing that down. So that's all you're doing. You got to think about like this is almost like a numbers thing. You're taking your success variable and pushing it up and taking the problem and the, because if you don't have anything prepared, it is a problem. But if you have five things prepared for the problem, then it's not a problem. And all you're doing is just, you know, maybe you're eating just a little bit of time, but it's much better than saying I can't do it, much better than not getting it, much better than saying you got it and you didn't. You know, it just makes you look like a ding dong. You know what I mean? You're just not, you're not delivering. You're supposed to deliver. You have to deliver. And if you don't push your success variable up, then that's what happens. You end up, a lot of people have ended a lot of careers this way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, they don't get hired again. The other one. Yeah. And then there's another part of this too. And the other side of that is being able to connect with people. So I already tell, you know, you and I hit it off. We have a lot in common, but there's also a natural charisma and ability that people have to connect quickly. And I'm sure that's gotta be the case. Like when you said you're working with sitting presidents or, you know, professional athletes or huge musicians and, you know, Walter Cronkite is there in front of you. Dude, there's got to be a certain intimidation factor.
That is just not the best. Like, is that just not the best? Walter Cronkite, the guy who called so many situations, including Apollo 11, like that was just like a highlight for me. And he couldn't hear anything. We didn't get to communicate much, which I hated. But I just like I can remember having a radio background. You know how important that is to us. That's huge. That's the these like he's if you were to name the most important one of all time, he's at the top of the list, if not the list top. You know what I mean? So. That was so great, man. I can't stop thinking about that. You know what I couldn't get over? And that's what I emphasized in the photo. If you go look at the photo, I couldn't get over how beautiful his eyes were. It sounds like a crazy thing to say about another man. Well, it's a crazy thing to say about another man. You know what I mean? Like if you're hetero, and I'm just like, I couldn't get over it. And so I was like, man, and I saw that and I just pushed the light up on his eyes because I wanted to bring something that nobody had seen before because, you know, he was in black and white half the time. He was, you know, it wasn't about him. It wasn't about him. Right. It was about what he was talking about. And I was like, oh my gosh, no one's ever seen this. And I just pushed the light into his face and then specifically just in his eyes. And I lifted that up above everything else. And even at 80, I believe 85, he still had the most incredible eyes. I was just like, good grief. I never saw that the whole time. And I've watched this guy talk 1,000 times, you know?
Well, that's so magical. There is something to dig into there, but I wanted to ask you about connecting with them and finding this moment of connection. Do you have a strategy for that? Or is it really just about being as authentic as you can in the moment? What do you have any tips or tricks for connecting with somebody, especially when they're a stranger or somebody that might be intimidating in these moments?
I do not kowtow to celebrities. I do not bend to celebrities. I treat them just like I'm talking to you right now. I think they can sense the yes men, the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The people that are just dying to get something from them. I will sometimes communicate and tell them, I don't want anything from you. Like the friends that I've actually made some celebrity friends and I just told them, I'm like, hey, I'm happy for your success. I'm happy with your fame. Awesome. But do not care. It's not that it doesn't impress me. It's just, I don't need anything from you. I don't want anything from you. And that kind of lets them feel at ease. That's just a kind of a thing I'll talk through. And then sometimes like you did at the very beginning of the show, and you did a great joke and funny jokes and stuff like that to kind of ease the tension and to break the ice. I will float an uncomfortable joke. I will float a joke out there. It's not like racist or weird or anything like that. It's just, I will float something that's a little edgy out there.
I told my wife the other day, we were packing for a trip. I told her that her swimsuit was a little too revealing. She told me to put my own suit on.
Oh, that's funny.
There you go. There's one for funny. You.
But you know what I mean? Like just a little slightly uncomfortable or, you know, just, I don't know. And I'll float something out, or I'll make a statement, or I'll say something about their career, or I'll just make a joke kind of aimed at them a little bit with a little bit of pokey poke, you know, and I'll do that to see how they deal with it. If they, and I can tell if they deal well with it, they kind of wake up sometimes, because there's a lot of times they, most people do, you got to understand, most people with celebrities and A-listers and things like that, they are surrounded by butt kissers. That's just 24/7. They're used to it. And so most of them are just on automatic. They're just floating from one meeting or one time period to the next time period. And they, but when somebody stops them and have to kind of think, they'll engage you, but you, and I've, sometimes I've had to puff up as big as they are. Like, I call it peacocking. Sometimes you have to peacock up a little bit.
Ooh,
as yeah. big as they are.
Be a little diva. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you have to kind of meet them where they're at, because they're already here. So you have to do that. And I've done that. Successfully, not sometimes it doesn't work, you know, and I can tell, you know, when it doesn't work, do the shoot, shut up and move on. And that's what I'll do, is I'll just kind of like, okay, they didn't respond well to it. I mean, dude, my favorite, if you're a Star Wars fan, my favorite one was meeting James Earl Jones, photographing him.
Oh, so awesome.
And I remembered this scene from, what's the movie with Kevin Costner? Field of Dreams. I remember a scene from Field of Dreams. And if you remember the character, Ray Kinsella, that's Kevin Costner's character. He picks up his favorite writer, and for some reason, the message is to take him to a baseball game. And there's all this like kind of weird spiritual stuff happening in the movie. And he, you know, asked to take his favorite writer, which is Terrence Mann, James Earl Jones' character, to the baseball game, because there's a message there that's supposed to be, they find a message at the game. He finds it. It's nothing to do with Terrence Mann. He takes him back home after the game in his little Volkswagen bus. And he kind of lies to him. And he said, you saw something up on the board, didn't you? And he goes, nope. He goes, yeah, you did. He goes, yeah, it was a message. And what'd the message say? It said, leave the man alone. And so he just kind of wants to let him out, because he thinks it's not about him anymore. And if you remember, he lets James Earl Jones out. James Earl Jones hops out of the car, and as he backs away from the car, he's like, okay, you know, like, I'm cool. Well, you know, nice meeting you. And they're about to say goodbye. And he goes, and he backs away from the car. And I asked him, I said, tell me about that scene. What did that mean? What are you slapping your hands? And that, I know that's some kind of method thing, but what was that? He looked at me and goes, no one has ever asked me that. And I was just like, what?
That's cool.
I said, really? Not even the director? I believe the director was Peter Weir, I think. I can't remember. And he said, yeah, no one's ever asked me that. I said, are you kidding me? I said, that was like a huge part of the movie. And I thought that was such a interesting thing you did. What does it mean? He said, that's what riverboat gamblers do when they would back away from the table, so they could show you that they don't have anything up their sleeves. I'm not cheating you. So they would slap their hands, because if you did that, something would fall out. And he did that to mean, all right, I have nothing to hide. I'm clean, you know? And that's what that was. And it just, the shoot itself changed that minute. Like, he was there to get in and get out. And when he did that, he knew, a lot of times this is about the exchange. He knew he was with a person that really, really cared about him. And you can really change the temperature or the mood of something sometimes just by being real and connecting. So I am looking for connections. You're right. I am looking for connections, and but I do research. I think about the person. I think about what they might like. You know, I really, really dig into them before I do a shoot with them, just to kind of see, to show them that it's important, their career is important, because he was just impressed that I knew anything other than Star Wars, anything other than Field of Dreams. I mean, he was in a movie called Great White Hope. It's an amazing boxing movie. Yeah. Have you ever seen him, like, when he was in his prime youth? That dude was cut, man. He looked like he could play for football for any NFL team. And
I think, didn't he do something with like Arnold Schwarzenegger or something too? He did like some weird thing. I might be thinking of somebody else, but
maybe, but I mean, he was,
dude, he was way back.
James
like
Earl Jones,
in the 70s and 80s.
He was in a movie called The Great White Hope, and he is cut. And you're like, that's James Earl Jones. What? And that may be a thing to bring back out for the internet, because I don't think anybody knows this. And it looks incredible. And he was so impressed. I even knew that. And so the shoot just turned out great, man. He went from kind of being there to being there. You know what I mean? And it was just fun to see that.
Yeah, you can tell when somebody knows your B-side cuts, right? You know when people have seen your big stuff, right? But when you go into the deep cuts, people are like, oh, wow, this guy really either did his research or he's a real legit fan, but either way, it wakes you up and you're like, oh, I don't even remember those stories.
Right.
Or, you know, not surprising if he wouldn't have said, oh, I didn't even know I did that in the scene. I was, you know, or that was 30 years ago. I don't remember
what
I did. You
know? Well, I always but say
those questions wake him up. It's all.
Yeah. And I always say, man, that there's a take and give to this, you know, in photography, especially because, you know, you're taking their image, they're giving you, you know, they're giving you their image and their likeness and their, your ability to use it. And you need to give something back. And I've always said that when you do this or you have the opportunity to work with anyone, it doesn't matter who they are, normal, average, everyday people or celebrities or, you know, government leaders or whatever, you've got to give something back every time. You have to give something of yourself. It's about the exchange. It can't just be about you take, you take, you take. They know takers. They work with takers. They're around takers all the time. And if you're not giving anything back to them, some kind of experience, then you really weren't there almost. You know what I mean? You kind of weren't really there. All you did was contribute to something that they're already used to and they're not used to much, you know, much at
all. That's gold. I love thinking about what you can give, especially to people like that when you're meeting millionaires and billionaires and stuff. Like, what could you give them that they can't get or by themselves? But I wanted to ask you one more question here before we play a game. I think when you meet somebody at this point in your career, like you've had a ton of success, you got a great portfolio. It's a little bit different than when you first started. So I would love to hear the story about what did you ever have a real job? Did you like work and then get into this? Were you always playful? And like, what was it like that first time? Or was there a moment where it switched over and you're like, oh, I'm a professional. I got this now.
Before I was a photographer, I worked in the music industry. I thought that, and you know, before that, I went to university for doing radio, and here we are, you know, 30 years later, I'm kind of doing this because I have my own podcast too. And the reason why I have my own podcast isn't because I want to hear the sound of my own voice, but I have worked hard to make the sound of my own voice sound really good. And that's a lot of practice, you know, voice and articulation part of that. And a lot of things you have to learn to do this to make that happen. But it's just full circle. I happen to be talking about the thing that I love, and I'm very lucky and fortunate to do that. But before that, I thought it was me. I wasn't sure, like anybody else isn't sure. And I was trying music industry. I did try radio. I worked for FM 100 here in Nashville for just a little bit. It was mostly syndication back then. So, I mean, it was just listening for, you know what it was? It was listening for tones and listening for when they came from their, you know, national affiliate to the local and all that stuff. You're just timing things and hitting cart buttons and all that. And I just wasn't really happy with the way radio was at the time because it just paid so little until you get a position like a program director or a music director, an actually salaried position. And so I just was searching around like everyone does. I was trying music industry. I was trying all these different things. And I've always said that photography almost chose me because I almost refused to think for a second that I could have a job like this. I didn't think, I always thought, and you know, a lot of us do, we think we have to shoot weddings. We have to shoot family. We have to shoot school photos. We have to shoot things that we might not like. And then that's it. That's all. I'm sorry, but that's all you get to do. And I thought that too. And that's not true. You can make anything happen. But the biggest thing with any kind of career, and if you want to call what we're doing a portfolio, you have to put it in the portfolio before it actually exists. So that means you have to put what you want to do in your portfolio, not what you've done. And that could literally go for any career. You have to put in there what you want to do. You can't put what you've done. And because you got to show people where you want to go. You have to show people where you imagine yourself and stuff like that. So if you put, you know, okay photos of somebody's graduation, then guess what? You're going to get hired for okay photos at somebody's graduation. And that is going to be your reality. And so to create a better reality, you have to create it yourself. And that's what I figured that out. Thank God. One area of my life I figured that out in. And I just knew that I was going to have to create stuff. And, you know, growing up in Nashville, I didn't really want to shoot country, but I love, you know, pop and rap and all types of music and just, you know, I mean, like any of us, like Star Wars and all this type of stuff. And so I just decided I'm going to create these scenarios, put them in my portfolio, and that's what I want to do. And doggone it, it worked. It took a while, but if you stay true to that and you work hard and you just keep pressing in on it, even when you don't think you can do anymore, it will happen because it's just, again, variables towards success.
I love it. Yeah.
You raise up
increasing the probability. Burden. Yeah, you're exactly right. I take that same philosophy and I think it's the Steve Jobs quote that he said, this whole world is made up of by people no smarter than you. It's all just a made up story, right? Yeah, and it's kind of like who you can get and how many people you can get to buy that story you want to tell of yourself. But you have to make it up.
You have to tell it, because if you're going to wait for somebody else to do the story, it's not going to happen. If you're going to wait for some, I think people sometimes just have that thing stuck in their mind, like Marilyn Monroe walking through the drugstore, getting discovered. That is not going to happen. That is the exception to every rule, not the average to every rule. That is not what everybody, that's not the experience for everyone. And if you're waiting for somebody to pluck you from obscurity, I got bad news for you. No one's coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. My message always was, even the people that are doing the picking, they don't pick obscure people. They pick people that have already had that experience, right? If you're choosing the Super Bowl halftime show, you don't pick a random local band. You pick the biggest band in the world that's going to add to your event,
right?
Not, you're not trying to add to somebody else's.
I'm not going to break a band at the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? It's not going to happen. I want somebody that has a mass appeal that everybody already knows and likes. And so you've got to be able to create that from nothing. And I've done it. It's hard, but it can be done. And don't think you can't do it, because everyone can do it. They just need the strategy on how, you know.
I love it. Are you ready to play a game?
Let's play a game.
All right, we're spinning our prize wheel. There are 10 games that it could land on. And you got Seen It trivia. This is movie trivia here. So I got 3 questions for you. You get 2 out of 3 right. You win.
Okay.
I'm going to see here.
Straightening my thinking cap.
Oh, my gosh. These are hard. All right. What was Mark Wahlberg's character's name in Boogie Nights?
Oh, no. Dirk Diggler.
Yes.
Don't ask me how I know that.
There you go.
Somebody told me that.
Name the actress who appeared in Smokey and the Bandit, Steel Magnolias, and Forrest Gump.
Sally Fields.
You nailed it. All right. You've already won, but a bonus one. Let me see if I'll let you pick. You can pick a similar one, actress, scene, or I don't like that one. What actress appeared in Blade Runner, Steel Magnolias, and My Favorite Martian?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one.
She's a 10.
Yeah. Oh, Derek?
Oh, no, that's wrong. Same genre, though.
Okay. Dude, tell me the movies again. Blade Runner,
Steel Magnolias, and My Favorite Martian. I haven't seen My Favorite Martian.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if that means the television show or the actual crap movie that came out. I'm not sure which one they're talking about, because that's two different women. But I'm trying. Dude, that's a tough one, because I can't think of the Blade Runner thing that is blowing me away. Like, that is blowing me away. I can't remember anybody except for Sean Young, I think was her name, but I don't, man, that's a tough one.
Daryl Hannah.
I didn't know that. Daryl Hannah.
I think My Favorite Martian one threw me, because it's the movie, not the television show. With that being the case. So yeah, that kind of threw me off, and that's all it took for me to spiral out of control.
I'll give you a bonus one. This is really hard too, but what actress inspired Toto's Grammy winning hit, Rosanna?
Rosanna Arquette for the win.
There you go. All right. Congratulations, Alan.
Thanks,
you nailed
man.
It. Again, you can find him at AlanClarkPhotography.com, at AlanClarkPhotography on all the socials. But you win a free 30-second commercial here. Any asks or gifts for the audience? How can we help you?
I think everybody, here's one thing I would encourage everybody to do. Sign up for my mailing list. You can do that by just going to the site. And that, you'll see it. It just pops up. It's one of those squeeze things that just pops up eventually. I would sign up, because here's what's about to happen. What's about to happen is I'm about to drop courses, both beginner, intermediate, advanced. I'm about to drop. I've got the podcast already, which is thephotointaken.com, which is a lot of fun. I'm inviting writers and photographers. It's not just photographers. One of the writers from The Boys on Amazon is coming up soon. Just had Floyd Norman, a Disney animator. He animated The Jungle Book. He's a wonderful person in the whole. I love him. I've got, but in previous, we've had NASA photographers, Nat Geo photographers. So I really try to have on my show like the top of the top when it comes to photography and creators and entrepreneurs and stuff like that. So a lot of things are changing here, but like over this next 4 or 5 months, I just put a team in place, like this big team to help me bring all this stuff. So there's going to be print pages. They can go and buy prints. They can get workshops and webinars. There's this whole like Creative Live thing that's coming down, and I'm really excited about it. So go to the website, sign up for, you know, my mailing list, and I will start dropping all this stuff soon.
Awesome. AlanClarkPhotography.com. Link is in the show notes. Alan, thanks again for your time.
This was fun. Thank you.
A great conversation.
Thank you.
If you want more information on Playful Humans, go to PlayfulHumans.com. Obviously, you can subscribe to the podcast and all the socials at Playful Humans as well. And I think most importantly is go out there and have some fun. Figure out what you like to do and go do it. Design that story and go tell it. That's what is the most fun for me. So, like I always say, if you can't be good at it. Go play, everybody.
That's right.
Don't wait for tomorrow. Live for today. Keep on chasing the sunshine. And go out and play.
It's me really playing.
You nailed it.